This is the building that Pam's built in 1961 and moved into. And when they originally built it, it was just this bit that, from roughly where you're standing to the right.
Yes.
The part that's hanging off to the left back there was added later. It was actually added during my time there. But the original building was just this part. And there was, famously, a metal plaque with the Pam's logo,
okay,
with 4141 under it, which was affixed to one of those
bricky things over there.
Now, you see the one that is not complete? Actually, there's two.
Oh, yes, I see.
But one of them is not complete.
Yes.
It's because it had the plaque there.
Really?
And when they took the plaque out, it destroyed...
It pulled part of that.
It pulled part of that. Why there's another one up higher, I don't know. Because that didn't used to be like that. But the front of the building has not changed very much at all. Other than the new people put their own 4141 up, obviously.
So this was purpose-built to be studios and offices.
Yes, exactly. And after Pam's was no longer, there were some other studios that operated out of here. A tape duplicating place operated out of here. Then for a while, it wasn't really studios at all. It was just, you know, they rented out office space to...
Yeah.
Graphic designers or whoever needed an office space.
Pam's would be here till about what, 76?
78.
78? Oh, okay.
And then at some point, we mentioned Thompson Creative moving into Insurance Lane. At some point, Larry lost his mind and bought this building because, again, he believes in the magic of the address. So Thompson actually operated out of here for a number of years until that idea caught up with him. And, you know, they moved out or he sold it or lost it. I'm not sure what exactly.
Can we go across and have a look at what it looks like? But when you came to start your first day working here, the rookie on the block, can you kind of remember what it was like to arrive here? Because you'd had all of these packages with that name on, certainly.
Well, my story is that... I was supposed to start, or I did start, on a Monday.
Yeah.
And I got into Dallas Sunday evening, actually. And I found a place to stay, and I said, well, I'd better rehearse finding this place so that I can find it in the morning.
Yeah.
So eventually, after a few wrong turns, I found my way. I was in my little car, and I parked right there where we parked just now.
Okay. And you've driven down from New York?
Yes. In that exact space. And I sat there and I rolled down the window and I looked out at this. And I had that moment of wow.
Yeah.
And I was completely entranced with the whole, you know, mystical moment that I was having when a Dallas police car pulls up behind me. Wondering what I was doing, because all he could see is it's a Sunday night, it's a business street, there's nobody working, here's an out-of-state car sitting there,
yes,
as if I were perhaps the getaway driver for the burglary that was taking place. So my welcome to Dallas was the Dallas Police Department asking to see my driver's license and what was I doing here. And I said, well, I'm starting work here in the morning, I just wanted to find the place, so apparently... He accepted that and left me alone. But
when you
that sort of fractured the romantic moment I was having.
You say that's Bill Meek's office down there. So what about you? Because you were doing all kinds of different bits and pieces in terms of what you were working on. You didn't have an office as such.
I didn't have an office per se, but I was, you know, the dubbing room was back here, and so I spent time there. I spent time in the studio. I spent time in the mail room. It was all back half stuff. There used to be a mailbox. The post office had a mailbox right out here.
Really?
So at the end of every day, I would gather up all these outgoing packages full of demos and stuff them in the mailbox. made that big walk every day at about 5:30.
And was that like in the days of jam back at Insurance Lane when you were having to work silly hours? Here, presumably, it wasn't exactly silly hours.
Here there was... No, it was pretty much 9 to 6, but okay. There was some overtime.
Yeah.
There were
that's
evenings...
That's the original. That'll be original. 41, 41.
I remember. It is.
It's a gallery.
Pam's plaque.
It's an art gallery, isn't it?
Yeah.
Judging by the easel, I'm using my detective skills there to make an assumption. There is a receptionist sitting in here.
Well, this main hallway that you can see going all the way back was in fact the main hallway. The reception was up here, and all these offices were left and right off that hallway, and the hallway ended at a door that would let you into the studio.
Wow.
But it's very different now, because I've seen pictures.
Is it painted a different colour? It's kind of old, slightly old olivey green colour, brownie.
The brick is the same colour. The olivey greeny was more gold. Yes.
Yeah. It was a bit more striking.
It was also a lot more romantic to come to this gold-encrusted Pam's building. Because if you remember, or if you know... The original Pam's little oval sticker that went onto all the tapes was black and gold.
Oh, right. I've never seen one. I have got no original Pam's at all. No.
That's
a terrible disappointment.
My boy, I must take care of you. I shall take care of you.
That is a kind of middle-class deprivation I had to go through.
So you can see that the original building ended where this wall is and went straight back.
Yes.
It's clearer to see where the division is between the new and the old. If you just look here.
Let me just get this side of you.
You know, I will learn this.
No.
I'm really sorry.
No, it's fine.
So
this bit's being built on in your time.
But the thing is, they had the main studio here was Studio A. There had at one point, before I arrived, been a very small little studio upstairs called Studio B. By the time I arrived, we didn't have that in the episode.
I was going to say, wouldn't it be great if a jam jingle now played?
Or Pam's demo.
Yes.
But before I arrived, that upstairs little studio, which is more like a voiceover booth kind of, that had been turned into offices. So I never saw Studio B, but I just knew that there had been one. Well, they had a second studio because, like Jam, they had outgrown having just one. But it was in a rented place about a mile away that we can drive by. And it was Studio C.
Right.
So when I got here, there was Studio A and Studio C, which led me on day one to ask the obvious question, where is Studio B? I said, oh, we don't have that anymore. Okay, well, because Studio C was physically a mile or so away, it's a hassle, you know. So they finally decided to add on to the building and make Studio C be over here. And they broke ground on this in 72, I think. In fact, I have a picture that I took with my crappy Instamatic camera standing there looking at the construction going on. Now, the upstairs windows were not there. These low first floor windows were offices, but those upper ones were not.
Okay.
So the back part, the tall part, was Studio C, and that part was Studio A.
Do I remember that there was a Studio C Singers, or there was a different vocal group called Studio C, or
there
is that?
There was briefly a thing called Studio C Productions.
Right.
And this may give you an insight into the business ethics of Bill Meeks. Because he had gotten his hand slapped by ABC for doing CBS, he said, well, I need a different label to sell to competing stations under. So we'll sell Pam stuff to one station and Studio C stuff to somebody else.
From the same address.
Yeah. From the same address on the same...
No one will ever notice.
No one will know. So it was stupid. It was short-lived. But what happened was Studio A is where what I call the real Pam stuff was done. The seven voice packages, the ones you were just talking about, that was done here. Studio C was where I refer to it as the sandbox where the kids play. And this is where they would eventually put me and Chris and Jim Kirk and Cheryl and all these other people to make, you know, do some young thing. You know, we need some young thing to sell, you know. And so, you know, that's where we'd sing solid rock. That's where we'd sing Stereo Island. That's all of these packages which were not the routine seven voice typical thing.
Yeah, more hybrid stuff.
Were sung over there. Now, that studio was not as good. The equipment was not nearly as good. You know, it was worse off than Insurance Lane was as far as being a great studio.
Yeah.
It was basically just a room with microphones in it. But, you know, they had that sort of the lesser stuff, if you will, was done at Studio C. And then when Studio C moved over here, that continued to be the case, although due to proximity, some of the good stuff started to spill over into Studio C.
I remember first hearing Solid Rock and absolutely loathing it, whereas now I look back very affectionately on it.
You and everyone else. Well, I must say the original custom version, when it was sung for WLS, which was shortly after I started, it was like a month after I started, they were doing Solid Rock, so I saw it happen.
Okay.
And it was supposed to be this young sound. And so they got eight singers. And they were all, you know, the younger, I'm a singer, I'm in a band, I'm in a singer. You know. Maybe three or four of them had any business being in that group. And it was very obnoxious and boisterous and vibrato. But in syndication, when you from South Dakota would buy that package, they did it with five.
I was thinking it was a reduced number, yeah.
And the five that they used were, in fact, people who were in the eight. But it was the more
people jingles, could sing jingles.
The more jingle-savvy bunch. And we did those in Studio C. So when I eventually graduated from the dubbing and editing room and they started to let me do stuff in the studio, you know, the path was... Okay, go learn how to do this in Studio C where you can't hurt anything, you know. I mean, it was that sort of mentality.
Yes,
it's like, okay, this is the golden egg. Don't mess with that. Go
experiment.
Here. Go.
And
learn
do I is am I misremembering or is it just kind of silly this idea that Solid Rock was somehow influenced by Jesus Christ Superstar? That. I don't mean the person, I mean the music.
Yeah, well, he was one of the singers.
Ah, the beard, the familiar beard,
Well, I think there was some music of that era that played into it.
Yes.
In
it's hard to think
way.
Of Andrew Lloyd Webber as groundbreaking now, but. Fascinating. I'm just going to get some more pictures.
There was actually a jingle done in an obscure Pam's package that went Dan Ingram Superstar, and they lifted the Superstar melody from the song.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah.
So
it was a very weird package that nobody ever bought, including them, called I think that was in Hot Vibes.
Okay. Yes. Even the name of the package worries you, didn't it?
Yes. Yes. But much magic happened here, particularly for me. I know it's all about when you grew up and what you remember. But in the 60s, growing up listening to all these radio stations from WABC, but also all the others that you could hear and hear of, and the magic was the jingles, and it all happened right there.
So this will have been built about when? When are we talking about?
61.
Okay. Gosh, well, this really is the home of it, isn't it, for many of us?
It's the ancestral home.
It is, yeah.
It is, and what went on here is the reason I'm here,
yeah.
Which is the reason you're here.
Yes.
It's all
Exactly. And yet it would have been so easy to drive past it. I mean, there's no sense at all of its momentousness for people like us, I suppose. Wonderful.